Hi, welcome to Moss Radio. This is Nourish Up, and I'm DJ Billa. I'm really excited about this. This is my first show for Moss, so thank you so much for having me, and I'm really looking to see where this is gonna keep going. But I really want to sit here and talk about today the importance of what it means to nourish ourselves, to nourish the people around us, the people we love, the people we care about, our neighbors, the people that are always around us, and how are ways in which we can do that. I grew up in a family and a community that was always focused on food and on making sure that people are taken care of through food. It's probably the first and probably the most potent way that I feel like I care for people is by feeding them, by feeding whoever walks in to the doors of my apartment at any point in time, by bringing food to whomever needs it, when they're sick, when they're feeling low, when they need a boost of anything, when they're happy, when it's a birthday, when it's a function. Everything always revolves around food and around nourishment. So I want to make sure and I want us to know that that information can be passed on. And so that's what I'm here to do today. When I think about food, one of the things I first think about is actually from this book, Vibration Cooking, by Verdame Smart Grosvenor. I read this book, I read bits of it at least, about, I'd say, a little under a year ago. And I felt as though I was reading a book that, you know, something my mother would have agreed to for the first time when it came to a cookbook and when it came to how she realized cooking herself. One of the earliest lines and like one of the first lines like that's in this book is when Grosvenor talks about how when she cooks, there's never any measurements, never anything that's weighed, just by vibration, just by what things look like and what, you know, ingredients smell like, what is, you know, what works for that day, what makes sense for that day. It's just by different strokes, and it's just by what comes up on that day. And I feel like I think about that a lot because I was never really given much of, like, a recipe when I learned how to cook, at least when I first learned how to cook. It was more of always a, I'm gonna throw, you know, whatever works on here and hopefully it works out, and sometimes it's messed up and sometimes it ends up being great. But in a lot of ways I think it's made me a lot more in tune with the process and made me a lot more present with the process, because I don't feel like I'm just reading off of a piece of paper and following some, you know, really concrete set of instructions like it's a science project, but rather something that feels a bit more physical in my body. It's also why I feel like I measure things a lot with my hands, by pinches, by a couple handfuls. It makes the most sense in a lot of ways. So I think that's something I wanted to start out with by putting there and referencing this work. Also because Vibration Cooking is a very, I'd say it's a really beautiful cookbook that also encapsulates these amazing travel accounts. But I think it grounds us in thinking that, you know, food really is just food. It's really just, it's something that, you know, everyone eats and everyone has their own patterns and own ways in which they're eating. And there's not this sense of, like, really active mystification that comes with it. Sometimes it's very ordinary. Sometimes it feels very extraordinary, depending on the kind of any new ingredients you encounter and whatnot. But at the end of the day, there is this sort of, you know, daily and, like, ritualistic process to it, which I feel like is what I've come to now when I think about cooking and when I think about what it means to cook for people. It's not necessarily just the it's something's for a celebration and something is for a special occasion. I'm doing this because it's my birthday or it's some kind of a function. But rather, I was just in the kitchen and I'm gonna make a meal and these are all the things I just have in my pantry and that's it. But there's something beautiful and like really sweet about making it a ritual and making it this ritualistic process, because at the end of the day it becomes a way to care, and it becomes this very physical and tangible action to care for folks. So I wanted to start with that before I kind of got into how I'm gonna explain, I think, a lot of my cooking processes. I think for me at least, I learned how to cook, I'd say about a few, not too long ago, honestly. It's only been, I think, a few years. And I don't think I ever had any formal recipes that were passed down to me. My family doesn't do anything specific like family-based recipes in terms of, oh, this is this person's recipe for this, and it's very special in that way. Everyone has their own ways of cooking. In fact, I feel like my family has a way to often gatekeep their own practices and processes because, they find that it makes the taste of things a lot better, but I don't see much of a point in that. So I think I started learning just by tasting, I'd say. I feel like I learned initially what works and what doesn't work and what pairs well, at least in my taste, like from the food that I ate when I was growing up. And a lot of that were very South Asian, predominantly like South Indian flavor profiles. So I'd say a lot of food was based and like rooted in like mustard seeds, a lot of cumin seeds. There was a lot of, I'd say, turmeric in like most recipes. There's a lot of like ginger roots. There's quite a bit of like a very solid like ginger garlic presence in like almost every bit of food. There's also a lot of fennel, I'd say, use fennel seeds in particular. I feel like we didn't use the actual vegetable as much. I'd say we had a very big focus on lentils all throughout, different types of dal, and different types of like split lentils and whole lentils that were added into like every stew. Lentils just eaten on their own. It was added to rice. It was probably one of the biggest, most consistent things that I ate that I feel like I think for a while I grew a little weary of at some point. It got a little boring, but I feel like now I really like my lentils now, and I think it's something I feel like I'm going to talk about a bit more later on how I feel like I prepare them at this point. But I think a lot of lentils is something we used, and then I grew up, at least in my household, we were all vegetarian at that time, and so every, whatever season it was, like pretty much any vegetable was being used. We used, I'd say, a lot of different kind of like root vegetables, a lot of taro roots, a lot of taro roots, I'd say, a lot of different types of potatoes. We also use like quite a few different types of like radishes. I remember we'd use different kinds of squash as well, a lot of pumpkin. There's also a big emphasis on like gourd, like the gourd family vegetables within South India in particular. So we used a lot of that for a lot of stews, different like mixed vegetable kind of dishes. And in a lot of, I'd say, mixed vegetable dishes, and in a lot of our, even like our the breads that we eat, for example. And then in terms of like our breads, I'd say we did a lot of whole wheat and whole grain kinds of breads that were usually just like that were not really fermented necessarily. It was a really quick, easy dough of just like wheat flour and water. And then I remember my mother would like usually like add some kind of either like remember her doing beets or like sweet potatoes like in the bread as well, like chopped in to it, and it was like within the dough. So that was like a more greater addition of vegetables as well. And at least it made sense in the kind of food that we're eating as well. And so I'd say those were like, and then obviously rice was probably the most common and biggest of meals. We had rice with pretty much every meal, and I think it varied. I think as we went on with life, I feel like rice became pretty synonymous with like every function, with every single meal in general. And it became also a very like, it was a very staple, it was a big staple in the household. And I think it still has a pretty big significance in terms of just how we look at harvest and harvest seasons as well. We celebrate like a harvest festival that's usually in January, and so that like rice is still a very big important part of it. And so the practice of eating it and continually having it at home became really, really significant and really, really important throughout our everyday lives. And so I think those sort of foundational ways of eating and foundational ways of cooking was like a big emphasis of what I think of it now as this kind of, as a big sort of, probably one of the most important nourishing factors in my life. I think coupled with that, like everyone always cooked for each other as I was growing up. And I feel like that's something I want to bring up as well, because that's the kind of, I feel like that's the kind of environment that I want to bring, and also like an environment that is important to share out now as we think about community resources and resource mapping as well for ourselves. Cooking for each other and like really just good, nutritious food is probably the biggest and one of the most important of that, because as we're able to, you know, we know we're able to meet our basic needs together, that big brings a big change and a big significance into how we're able to fundamentally operate with each other. I remember growing up, at least, like we'd have friends, family, friends, coworkers, neighbors bring over different kinds of food on a regular basis. Like back when, you know, my brother and I were both like small toddlers and kids, like they'd be people all the time that would bring over different kinds of food. And I think we'd do the same for anyone else, for people who are leaving town, for people who are coming into town, making batches of like rice and vegetables and dal and like batter for them so that they have that for the next few days. It becomes a very kind of rhythmic mode of caring for folks around us. And I think that's something to continually emphasize when it comes to cooking practices, that it's once again, it's not just this thing for special occasions. It's also not the most glamorous of things. I feel like I often, and I think I talk about this with my mother a lot as well. Like, I don't think I look too glamorous when I'm cooking. You know, I'm not chopping, and it's not like about, you know, everything needs to be chopped in the exact perfect order. It's also not about, you know, having to have the most fresh and perfect, picture perfect looking ingredients all the time. It's about what makes sense for the moment and what makes sense for the day and what makes sense for our bodies as well as we try to figure out the practice as a whole. So I'd say I want to start with that as like a way to ground ourselves in thinking about what it means to nourish before I jump into some recipes that I'd like to talk about. One of the first things, and I mentioned this earlier, is dal. So dal is a kind of split pulse. It's a really, really good source of protein, and it's usually cooked to be pretty like soft and mushy. So it's one of the foods that I feel like I remember first eating when I was like first introduced to like soft foods when I was like a child, a baby. And I usually do like crushed cumin, a bit of turmeric, some chilies, some whole chilies. And it's a really good part of like it's one of those it's one of the also like as growing up as like vegetarian, I think it's probably one of our biggest sources of getting protein. So the way in which I like to make dal, my favorite is usually using tur dal, which is a kind of split pigeon pea is what it is. They're called pigeon peas. They're like these little baby legumes. They look so small. And with those, I'd usually do soak those in a bowl of water, about a cup, 2 cups of water, for about an hour or so, just so they get soft. And I usually do about a hand, like for one portion, I do about a handful. And you'll notice that I'm gonna start using measurements mostly like a handful, a spoon-ish or a pinch. I'm gonna try my best to give, I think, like as exact of measurements as I can, but also I think part of the process of like just cooking on a very daily basis is that there aren't really any exactitudes, and there also is like not much of a, wrongness to it. I think some days you're gonna want more of the kind of like pungent flavor that comes from turmeric than other days. Some days you want more of the like nutty flavor and the more the more nutty flavor that like cumin has to offer. Some days you're gonna want that more peppery taste, and so you're gonna add so much more pepper. Some days you're barely gonna want it, and so you're gonna do a little tiny pinch and call it a day. I think that's part of the process as well as figuring out is to figuring out what works and what makes sense for our bodies. So that also is gonna reflect on how I measure things and how I think through things as well. But when it comes to dal, I'm gonna start about with about for one like I'd say for one portion, it's about one handful, about a handful in a cup of water and let that soak. And so you can multiply that for however many portions. Dal is one of the things I'd say that it does, it's great for a big batch of people. You can make it for a big batch and store it. It stores really well in the fridge. And it's usually just by on the basis of like handful after handful. Now I usually cook mine on the stove. You can also pressure cook as well if that works better. For that, it varies based on pressure cook model, so I'm just gonna refer to this, like refer to the way of making this just for the stove, just so there's a bit more clear of information. But after the dal has been soaked for about an hour, we're gonna boil some water on the stove, and when it gets to a boil, add your dal to the water. Now this isn't like rice where you need to have a very exact measurement. You just want enough water that's gonna cover all the dal that you have. So it can be a few cups. If you're doing a very big batch of dal, it can be like in a big pot. But once you add your you're gonna add your dal to the boiling water and then bring it down to a simmer. It's usually gonna bubble up and start like frothing, which is a good sign because the dal has already been soaking, so it reduces the cook time. And so in terms of cook time, once again, there's not too specific of a time, I'd say. I'd say for about every like one portion, it ranges from about like 7 to 10 minutes. It can range to like about 7 to 10 minutes. It also varies on how long. I'd say for a half an hour to an hour of soaking can be about 7 minutes, sometimes even a little less than that. For a longer, like if it, the dal has been soaking for much longer, it will take probably like 5 minutes or so. And you can usually test by just scooping up a little from the pot and pressing a fork to it and seeing how like smushed it gets and how soft it is. When it's a bit soft and when it, it feels like it doesn't have too hard of a bite to it, then it's ready. You want it to be as like the consistency also varies per taste. Some folks really like a really soft dal. Some prefer a bit of a harder dal. It also just varies on personal preference. So once that done, it can be drained. The water can be drained and set aside. Like a little bit of the water can be reserved because we're gonna add that to our actual final dal, but it can be set aside for a minute. And then to work on seasoning it, you want to start with about for every one portion, I'd say about one clove of garlic and just about like, I'd say half an inch of a little block, maybe 3/4 of an inch of a little block of ginger that you want to just like finely chop. It doesn't have to be too like exact, but just as fine as you can get it down. If it is easier to grate and you have access to like a little grater or a microplane of some sorts, can always grate, but you don't want to add that immediately in because that's going to burn usually with like grated garlic and grated ginger. It burns a lot quicker. So you're going to want to do that a bit later, as you start cooking. But if not, if you're doing chopping, you want to just chop that. And then you're going to want to start by doing like a bit of a tadka. A tadka is kind of like a tempering, essentially. It's usually just a, like an oil with mustard seeds. Sometimes, if you have curry leaves and access to curry leaves also work really well. And a little bit, and then your ginger and garlic. Now, this is your, it's like a very classic sort of like flavor enhancer and flavor booster. That works really well with a lot of these recipes, and it also can be adjusted based off of like your own, like the way in which you prefer spices, the way in which you prefer the intensity of like these aromatics. It can be very adjusted towards that. So you're gonna start with oil. I'd say usually for dal, traditionally, I know a lot of folks will use sesame oil, and that's great. If you prefer olive oil, that's also a really good option as well. But I'd say one of those two, and that's usually also like what I feel like I've worked with. But you can also give it a shot. If there are other oils that you have, you can give it a shot and try it with that as well. And I'm sure that it'll have a good working process. But to that, you're going to add just about half a spoon, half a little teaspoon of mustard seeds. And half a teaspoon of cumin seeds, and let that kind of, once it starts kind of jumping up, that's my way of telling if it's, you know, tempered enough at that point. You can add in your ginger and your garlic. And if you have curry leaves as well, you can add them in at this time as well. After that, once the ginger and garlic cook down, you can, you know, they've gone a bit more translucent. You don't smell the like raw smell of ginger and garlic anymore. You can add in the cooked dal that you just have along with some of the water with it. So the water is gonna, you can, so in terms of consistency, different folks will definitely prefer different things. If you like a drier dal, you can still add some water, but it will, you know, cook down and reduce very quickly, so you can just do a bit. If you like a much more liquidy dal, then add a bit more water, and as you know, as it kind of cooks down, you can keep adding a bit more and more. But with that, you can just do a little bit, like about a half a cup of water, I'd say, for one portion of cooked dal, and then add more as needed, depending on how much of the consist, what kind of consistency you prefer for it at the end of the day. And after that, you're gonna just wait to cook it down pretty slowly, and keep this on a low heat all throughout. And then in terms of seasoning, I like to do about a pinch of, I like to do like a bit of salt, about like a couple pinches, I'd say, and then 2 pinches of pepper. I don't like really, really salty food. I feel like I have a pretty low tolerance for it, so I tend to not pick up and do a lot of salt. But once again, I think, especially with salt and pepper, it's very up to, it's very up to folks. It's very up to what kind of they end up they end up preferring at the end of the day. With dal though, I'd say with typical spices, turmeric, ground turmeric, you can usually get a pretty good, like, I think at this point you can find it at most stores, but you can also get a good like bulk of it at, if there are any spice stores around, they have a good bulk of turmeric that's usually a lot more affordable and accessible. So ground turmeric, a bit, about half a spoon, half a teaspoon of that. Ground chili powder, again, this can also be any kind of chili powder, but about a half a teaspoon of ground chili powder. And then I like to also do cumin powder, about a half a teaspoon of that as well. A little bit of white pepper, about a crack or two of white pepper, and give that a good mix, give that a really good solid mix. Once that's done, if you have curry leaves, you can add that to top it as well. And then you're just going to combine everything until it's fully mixed in. Your dal should be pretty bright at this point when you're using, especially when you're using the split pigeon peas. It should be pretty bright yellow at this point, mixed in with, you should see the beads of the mustard seeds, the cumin seeds. And once all those ingredients are all combined, it's all done. And depending on the consistency, like I said, you can add more water and keep cooking it down so that it gets a bit more to a liquid consistency. If you don't really like that, you can stop with the bit of water and that's it. And I like to usually have this with rice. I usually cook my rice on the stove as well. And I do a very classic, just like 2-to-1 ratio on the stove. I feel like I tried doing the finger method, I remember a while ago, and I got really confused. So I'd say with rice, I always do about 2 cups of water for every 1 cup of rice on the stove. So bring 2 cups of water to the boil, to a boil, and no oil or no salt. I know people used to, a lot of folks I've spoken to have still, like, will add oil to keep it from sticking. I find that still doesn't stick, and it's usually okay, especially if I'm using like a non-stick pan. It's really okay. So you can just do 2 cups of water, and I usually use like a long grain rice. I prefer basmati rice for the most part. I feel like I use that for pretty much everything, and I also usually will get that like in bulk at a sort of South Asian or Desi grocery store, and it's a lot more accessible as well. And so once the water's, the 2 cups of water to a boil, you're gonna add your 1 cup of rice. Please wash the rice. Always the biggest thing. I feel like sometimes I'll get lazy, but I'm still gonna wash my rice. And then add that to the pot and then bring it to a simmer. I'd say rice usually takes about like 12 to 15 minutes. It varies on the temperature. I usually take a look just to see how fluffy it looks. So I'll just like take a fork and usually kind of mix it a little bit to see how, if the rice is fluffed up once it's at a simmer. Because I usually put it at a simmer, cover it with a lid, and a lot of times like the water will start like bubbling up. So when I open the lid, and I'll take a look and see if it's fluffed up quite a bit. And then also if, if all the water is evaporated for the most part. And once it's done, it can just stay with the lid closed, and so the steam is trapped in, and it just keeps the rice a bit in that same fluffy, kind of pretty moisturized consistency. With rice, I try to not store it for too long in the fridge. I try to do my best to have it within a day or 2 days. So I'd say it's also a great thing. I think this is like one of the first recipes I'd say that's great for like a big batch of people. If you have a lot of people that you need to feed, a lot of food that you need to bring, whether it's to a community picnic, if it's to mutual aid, I'd say dal and rice is like probably one of the easiest and probably one of the most affordable in terms of that. It's very nutritious. It's something that I feel like I think as a kid I made a lot of fun of because I said it was very boring, but I can say now completely that it's one of the most easiest and one of the most like comforting meals you can have, and it's very well flavored. And so I think I'm glad that that's the first recipe that I'm able to share. The second one that I feel like I wanted to share is a bit more of probably like one of my like closest, the recipes I feel like is like closest to my heart, and I think something I make quite often. It's my take on a shakshuka. So it's a, which is a North African tomato and egg based recipe. I started just like, I remember when I was studying very briefly out of the country, I was craving of a lot of like home food and like home cooked meals, and I was craving food that I could make at home and make quite easily. So I remember making the shakshuka quite often. And I think in a similar case, like, it's something that also is great all across all seasons because it doesn't necessarily require a very specific kind of produce. So it's usually, I'd say, this is for about one serving. One cup of, like, one can of tomatoes would usually work for about, I'd say, three people, a serving size of three. And this is like this, I'd say, like, a small, about, what is it? I'm trying to figure out the measurements. Like, right now. I'd say about, like, a standard, like, 15 ounce can of tomatoes. Would be for about, like, would be about three servings or so. So 15 ounce of tomatoes, give or take three servings, depending on how hungry for folks are in general. Also great canned tomatoes, I'd say pretty cheap, like, relatively accessible in terms of pricing. And also, once again, like, goes across, like, stores really well, obviously, and goes beyond, like, seasons, so you don't have to worry as much about finding really fresh, beautiful tomatoes in December when you want this. With shakshuka, I usually, my, the only thing that I really do differently is that I like to add some gochujang, Korean chili paste. If you don't, if it's not there and or you don't have access to it, there's no worries at all. I feel like you can also, if you have access, if you have soy sauce at home or rice vinegar, or a kind of chili oil, something with, like, a bit of umami and a bit more spice, that works really well with the tomatoes and also just has a different, a bit more, it adds a bit more of a different flavor profile in general. So I really enjoy it as a whole. But for shakshuka, I normally do about half of a, like, really big, I do half of, like, a big red onion, and I cut it into, like, strips. I don't like to dice it, also because I feel like dicing is honestly a lot harder, so I like to just do little strips of the red onion, and then I like to do about three cloves of garlic usually for the 1 15 ounce can of tomatoes. So the garlic I like to finely chop, and the half a red onion I like to cut into strips. Once I have that, I'm gonna just saute those pretty quickly. Probably takes, I'd say they cook down in about, like, 2 minutes, a minute and a half, 2 minutes on, like, low heat, just with some olive oil. I'd say for shakshuka, olive oil is usually gonna be the best. And I'd like to cook that down for about 2 minutes or so. And once that's done, I'm gonna add in, I usually like to add in my gochujang. I do about a spoonful of gochujang if you have it. If you don't, you can also just do soy sauce and rice vinegar as well here. If you have harissa, harissa also works really well. If you want to do a spoonful of harissa, add that to the cooked onions and garlic, and that is delicious and it's amazing. And then I like to add in some soy sauce and rice vinegar just so it gives a bit more umami alongside the tomatoes as well. And once I do that, I'm gonna just cook that down until it's all, like, well combined. It's just for about, like, a minute. Again, a minute, or, like, a minute and a half at max. I just want to make sure that all the liquid has mostly reduced, and I can, like, start smelling at this point all the kind of the combination of the onion and garlic with the gochujang and soy sauce. I feel like a lot of ways in which I like to tell when my food is done is just by scent. So whether that's cooking down my onions and garlic, whether that's in this step of making sure that the gochujang or the soy sauce has all, like, been reduced. It's just by, it's usually by scent to see, okay, this feels like it doesn't smell, like, as raw or smell as the same as I just poured it out of the bottle or took it out of the container. So I like to think of it in that manner. But once I do that, I'm gonna add in the can of tomatoes, whole can. I like to do whole tomatoes usually. Just the can of whole tomatoes, nothing, no flavor, no, just plain whole tomatoes. Some folks, I remember talking about this recipe to, I think the first, I remember I was like teaching my roommate this, on how to make it. I know he prefers diced tomatoes. He's not here with me today, but I feel like he would tell me that he prefers diced tomatoes, and he still makes it with diced tomatoes. So both of those work, honestly. A diced tomato, I think a diced tomato is easier to like break down. I like the flavor of whole tomatoes more, but once again, it very much so depends on personal preference. And so I do about a can of whole tomatoes or diced tomatoes based on what you feel. And then after that, I'd say you're gonna just mix that up with the onion, garlic, and gochujang mixture. And I'm gonna wait for, I'm still at about a low heat, and I'm usually using like a pretty, just a standard saucepan for this. I'm just gonna start waiting for the tomato mixture to bubble. When it starts to bubble, I'm gonna do my dry spices. So I usually, because I added soy sauce already, and I usually do a pretty, kind of, I'd say a couple teaspoons. I'd say about, honestly, I'd say about a tablespoon to 2 tablespoons of soy sauce almost. About a tablespoon, 2 tablespoons, it varies. And about a tablespoon, half a tablespoon or so of the rice vinegar. I'd say because of that, I'm not gonna add any salt. If you like your food to be a bit saltier, then definitely go in and add maybe a pinch or two of salt. But I think for me, the soy sauce and the rice vinegar is usually enough. And so I go and I just do a few cracks of pepper, a few cracks of white pepper. I like to do some ground smoked paprika, a little bit of garlic powder, some ground cumin powder. And these are all just like a couple shakes, usually. I do it very much so by eye, just a couple shakes of each. And I also like to add in about a pinch or 2 pinches of za'atar to this as well. I think it works really well with the flavor of the tomato. So once that's all, I've added all my spices. I just give it a good mix. And then when it starts bubbling again, because it's still, on that low heat, when it starts bubbling again after I've added those spices, I'm gonna crack in about 2 to 3 eggs, depending on how much room I have in the pan. Can also always substitute eggs with like a kind of protein, if you want to add in. I know some folks like to do like a cooked chicken and the egg, or they like to add in, like some kind of a sausage and egg as well. That's also very doable at this step. But crack in about 2 to 3 eggs into just like the, I'd say like all around the pan. You don't have to, you can make little wells, but I feel like the wells usually don't work, so you can just crack them right in. And you're cooking them until I'd say the tops are like covered in like white, like covered in the white. So I usually put the lid on back on the pan, and this, depending on how, the heat is distributed on the pan as well, it can take about 2 to 3 minutes. But I'm usually looking for just the egg to not be, to be completely white, and for there to be this like kind of like little almost like transparent looking white layer on the top of the egg as well. And cook it for, I mean, however long as you like. I prefer a jammier egg, especially with shakshuka. So I usually do about 2 minutes or so, and like right when I see the little white layer come on top, I kill the heat and I'm all done. But if you prefer a harder cook, I'd say go for an extra minute, a minute and a half or so, so that it has that more hard boiled sort of feel to it. And once that's done, it's basically ready. I feel like at this point, I like to add usually a bit of crumbled feta. I usually get like a block of feta and just crumble it and add that on top. And if I have any herbs on hand, usually if I have cilantro or if I have some chives on hand, I'll just do a quick chop of that and add it on top. And my favorite way to eat this is usually just with some pita. But this is another, I'd say, another recipe that holds really well in the fridge, holds really well, like, as you keep it. And I think, honestly, the flavors taste a lot better, and soak up a lot better after it's stayed in the fridge for a while. And I also think that it's like a great food for just like on a regular basis. It's really easy in terms of like using just materials you have in your pantry and not really being really focused on some super hyper seasonal ingredients. So it becomes a lot more accessible because of that. And also is great for like a big batch. So if you also want to always do like a bigger, you want to do like one, two like big cans of tomato and you have a massive pan, you can do that and, just double or triple the amount of onions, garlic, and eggs that you have. So you can make a really big batch. So I think it works great once again for feeding a really large group of people and is a great, like, once really nutritional and delicious meal. And I feel like it has a really close place in my heart in terms of being also one of the things that I first grew really confident about in terms of learning how to cook. So I'd say that's the second thing that I'd say has really been a lovely thing to learn how to cook and to learn how to nourish ourselves. The last thing that I will probably give a recipe for that I'm gonna give a recipe for today. I'm gonna give actually a little I think I'm gonna give a little salad just because we're in the middle of summer, so it feels right that I feel like I want to make use of some summer produce based meals. For this, like, I think looking out on like if you have any home gardens, I feel like this works really well. But I'd say for the salad, I like to do some fennel that I usually chop just pretty finely. I don't like I've never had a I've never yeah I just I try to chop things as pretty finely as I can. I feel like I'm still working through my knife skills one way or another. But I'd say some fennel that's pretty finely chopped, and I'd say a handful of that into a big bowl. Also some finely chopped Tuscan kale. I think that honestly works a lot. I think it works a lot better with the texture of the fennel in this. So about a handful of kale as well, just Tuscan kale. And then about a small handful of like finely chopped dill. I feel like this is really fresh and adds to a really good freshness within the set of vegetables as well. So once I have those three, I'm just gonna dress that. I usually dress that really quickly, with a little bit of olive oil, a couple cracks of salt, and then a couple cracks of white pepper. This is so the greens just get like nice and well combined together. And then after that, I like to add in mandarin oranges, like some sliced pears, and I like to do some shaved carrots, and I like to do some shaved zucchini squash, and I also like to do some shaved yellow squash. These can also all be, either cut into little strips or shaved, or cut into little cubes based off of your own preferences and based off the materials you have as well. I think to shave, I usually use a little peeler. It does take a while for sure, and it is definitely a bit more time intensive and labor intensive, but it is nice. I feel like I like having the shavings a little bit more. And then for dressing, I tend to do a pretty simple, I like to do a little glaze for this, honestly, like a glaze-based dressing. So I'm gonna do for this, it's a just like this honey, it's a honey za'atar sort of glaze. So just on the stove, you're gonna do about a half a tablespoon of honey, with about half a teaspoon, a teaspoon, I'd say a teaspoon. You know what? Let's go for a teaspoon. A teaspoon of just some za'atar, about a spoon of like rice vinegar, I'd say, just for a sense, a little bit of acidity, and then a pinch of salt and a pinch of white pepper as well. And over the stove, just on low heat, I'm just gonna melt that down until it becomes the honey is nice and it's like a nice, a bit more of a liquidy consistency. It's starting to bubble up a bit more as a whole. And once that it's the, you know, entire mixture starts to bubble up, I'm gonna add in some olive oil so it becomes more of this, like a more of a dressing consistency and isn't too heavy with all the honey, and then give that a good mix. And add that on top of the entire salad and give it a good toss. I feel like this has been a really good go-to summer salad for me, at least this time around, and makes use of a lot of the good produce that's around in this point in time. Once again, works really great for a big crowd of people. This one, not as much, doesn't store as well in the fridge, so I'd say it's great for. You're doing a big cook for a bunch of people, or a big cook for yourself and for the folks around you, maybe. And this can be a very good way to make use of summer produce as well. But I'd say that's it for today in terms of our three recipes. I'll be back soon with more things. I'm really happy. This is like my first episode once again with Moss, so I'm really happy to be here. And I think once again, there's the beauty of cooking is really just about how it can become this really lovely daily ritual that is really just focused on nourishment and that's really always centered about care and not completely out of a place of compulsion or a place of having to perfect this very specific craft, but rather just a way to recognize that this is a way to take care of yourself, and this is a way to take care of the people around you, and this is a way to also learn through what resources are really around us and what resources we can continually provide for our environment. So with that, this is Nourish Up. I'm DJ Billa, and I'll see you guys soon. Bye bye.